That's one of my favorite organists, Jimmy Smith. Of course, you know I love the lady of the organ as well. But this is my all-time favorite as well. Jimmy Smith with Blues in the Night. And the man who put the Hammond B3 organ on the map as a jazz instrument. That's from his 1964 album titled The Cat. Jimmy Smith died in 2005. He was 79 years old. This is Lead Stories. I'm Beatrice Lead, and good to be back with you again for a brand new week. Lots of stuff will be happening this week. Lots of stuff. So we got to stay tight, stay close to each other so that we're moving at relatively the same pace without having much of an interruption. So we right with each other, keeping pace with each other. All right. So what are we going to talk about today? I thought we would talk about a very important subject. Oh, by the way, before I even get to that, let me just make a note here. As we watch the coverage, the ongoing coverage of the building collapse in Surfside in Miami, I wonder if you caught on to anything yet. It was so. Don't know how you missed it. Oh boy. It's 1:03 p.m. My system is saying, thank you very much for telling me that. But in this coverage, this ongoing coverage, there is something so stark. I wonder if it occurred to you how unusual it is. And of course, if it does occur to you that it is most unusual, I would want to know why. Why do you think so? I've been observing, hoping and praying that there would be evidence that my suspicion is just way off the mark. But every day, in reporting this tragedy, it's an awful tragedy, it just continues to be a central theme and yet completely ignored and unaddressed. Maybe you have noticed it too. And that is the other part of the story. That is a story that Miamians know very, very well. If any of this is ringing a bell with you, well, hold on to it because this is going to be our subject tomorrow. But it continued over the weekend. I just got so fed up of it. And I just turned off that we are being forced, essentially, to ignore something that is screaming at us. Screaming. I've talked about it before, but we see it now in full bloom, in full color, and it cannot be denied. It's not a good story. All right, so on Friday, as you know, Derek Chauvin was sent, who had been went on trial for the killing of George Floyd, and it was his sentencing. That was the story. Prosecutors had asked for 30 years in prison for the commission of this crime, but the judge found that that was not applicable. He said instead, he ruled that Chauvin will go to prison, will be sentenced to 22 and a half years in prison. And of the 22 and a half years, he will not have to be in prison for the entire time. He will be given the opportunity to serve, is it two-thirds of it in prison? And the rest he will be able to, if he qualifies, he'll be able to qualify for eligible for a special dispensation of serving the remaining 7.5 years under supervised release. That was the ruling. So, although the sentence was 22.5 years, 22 and a half years, the judge said that he can serve 15 of those years in prison. And by then, if he is eligible, if he becomes eligible for supervised release, then he may serve the remaining 7.5 years in that program. We didn't have a chance to talk about it because the decision came down after the program went off air, and of course we had the intervening weekend. So that's where we're going today. We're asking the question, what do you think of Judge Cahill's sentencing decision with regard to Derek Chauvin? What do you make of that decision? We've covered the case and related issues. And now comes the final piece of it, which is the sentencing. And this is what the judge decided. The judge was very particular to note that he was not swayed by public opinion or public pressure. He was instead concerned about the application of the law, strictly the law. Had nothing to do with what people wanted to happen, had nothing to do with public opinion. It was a matter that the judge could sentence within the strict confines of what the law permits, and that's what he did. Well, there are people pro and con. There are people who say this judge does not have a history of succumbing to public pressure, that he has a history of being a fair judge, and an insightful judge. There are others who say the judge's decision still basically sets aside the enormity of the crime. And it wasn't just that this was a killing, this was a particularly heinous killing where Chauvin deliberately deprived George Floyd of his life in a most inhumane way by cutting off his air supply, cutting off oxygen to his brain and to his body, kneeling, pushing his knee into his neck, and cutting off life-giving support. So that is the other half of what people are saying the judge really did not pay much attention to, and it is as much as the sentence as anything else. It's a very important part of the sentence to consider the enormity of the crime, to consider Chauvin's attitude as he committed this crime, his intention, and of course, his inevitable result, causing the death of George Floyd. So that's what we're talking about today, so we can catch up. We weren't able to do that, as I said. We were just not in sync with the court. The court was not in sync with us. It came up with this decision after our program on Friday. But we certainly can catch up today. 888-874-4888. We're asking, what do you think of the judge's decision? What concerns you about it, or are you okay with it in the sentencing of Derek Chauvin? 888-874-4888 is the number to call. And let's have a pretty clear picture from you. I don't want you to dilly-dally. Say exactly what you're thinking. Say exactly what you're thinking. And at least give us a rationale for what your opinion is on this matter. What caused you, or what is the basis for your opinion on it? 888-874-4888. This is a case that is not going to end anytime soon, by the way. It's going to go on for quite some time because there are so many issues raised during the course of the trial that still need to be addressed. And they may not be directly related to the trial, but certainly they are related to the trial. Concerning, say, for example, what is this issue of police reform? How do you get that done? What is it going to be? What will it look like? How will it translate in neighborhoods and on the street? What would be the change in police reform, the change in attitude among police officers, if these reforms or whatever they turn out to be would be implemented? All right. Let's go. You're kind of getting slow. Are you getting old like me or what? You should be on the ball. 888-874-4888. So that's where we're taking a look today. You have had a chance to look at the decision, I'm hoping. And to react within your own gut, what you think about it. Is this something that sits well with you? Is it something that disturbs you? And if so, what is, either way, what is the rationale for the way you feel? What causes you to think the things that you're thinking when it comes to this particular decision? I find that in times like this, what is really necessary, and it's usually left out, we have the experts stepping in, and they give us their expert opinion. We generally do not have the people's opinion, and it is a shame. And I think it's a huge omission. Well, actually, it's a commission because it's done quite purposefully to not include people analyzing. There's no faith that people have the capacity to analyze things. So they never asked. It's as simple as that. So the media would offer you all kinds of analyses by all kinds of people with all kinds of credentials. But you seldom see or hear of ordinary people who also have been observing the case, who also have ideas about what the case represents and the outcome of the case and its likely impact in the field of jurisprudence and policing. But we don't hear those things. So I'm asking you, but you're kind of slow today. I don't understand. I don't understand. I thought you would be on the ball. So it means that you've been partying all weekend and now you're tired. And you're kind of missing your usual energy. And you're taking longer than usual. But we really want to watch the clock as well. We don't want to run out of time. We have a time schedule here as well. So we want to make the best use of the time, which is to give you the opportunity to express your points of view. Ed from Queens starts us off today. Hello, Ed.
Hello, Yatrice. How are you?
Okay, thanks.
Pertaining to the Chauvin sentencing, it didn't surprise me, unfortunately. Like the trial, they went for the letter of the law. They didn't try to go for first-degree murder, which I thought was applicable. And the judge sentenced them within the parameters of the law, sending a message to police departments across the country that even if you do get convicted, we're not going to punish you unduly. We're going to punish you within the parameters that are set forth by the justice system. And because of the incestuous relationship between prosecutors, judges, and police, I mean, from that observation point, it's understandable. They're not gonna beat their own dogs. They're gonna let the dogs know, look, even if you do bite somebody, we're not gonna put you down. We're gonna put you out to pasture. 15 years is not, to me, is not adequate. I agree with George Floyd's brother. You know, we got a life sentence. George Floyd's never coming back. His daughter is fatherless. His brother is minus a sibling. And the way this man did it, he should be made to pay the ultimate price. I have no problem with the death penalty in certain circumstances. And I think that would send a clear message to law enforcement that no matter how close we are, how close the judiciary system and the prosecutorial system are related, when you take someone's life, we will take yours. And I think that message needs to be clear, and that would stop a lot of the police abuse, because it would give, like they say with the death penalty, it'll give you a second thought before you do something stupid.
In this case, you see no mitigating factors at all?
Nope.
Okay.
He was on the force for over 20 years. And out of those 20 years, he had 19 abuse complaints. He had just abused somebody before he killed George Floyd. They knew he was an issue. They knew he was a problem. He was a malignancy that was allowed to fester.
So if you were to look at the panorama of this case, the whole picture. Okay, the trial has been had, and we know you disagree with the sentence. But is there any, what do you see as the total picture here?
Well, I mean, in retrospect, like I said, this is a message that the judiciary is sending to the police departments around the nation that if you screw up, we're not going to kill you. We're not going to crucify you. You know, if you screw, like I said, they're not going to punish your dog. You know, they're not going to put the dog down. They're going to, we'll tighten the leash a little bit, but we're not going to put you down.
What do you think the likely consequence of that kind of thinking and action will be?
It's obvious, isn't it? while the trial was going on, there was another shooting of another individual less than 10 miles away from where the incident took place with Derek Chauvin and George Floyd. While the trial was going on, remember that?
Yes. There's
no consequence. You know what? My father said a long time ago, actions have consequences. You can do whatever you want in my house, but believe me, there's consequences. And if you're willing to deal with the consequences, then you can do your action. But if there's no consequences, then there's no right action, because there's no mitigating force to compel you to do right action.
Well, thank you for getting us started today and with such a thoughtful presentation. Thank you, Ed. Brother David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon. I've thought of this situation, and as I see it, it's so simple to me. Because of the relationship with the judiciary and the prosecutors and the police, the judge, I believe, it's my feeling, that what he did was to weigh the options, to give the amount of time for this particular sentence that he would feel that could fly with the masses of the public all over the world for a sentence of this type of murder. And at the same time, I am in agreement with Brother Ed that, you know, the message to the police and law enforcement people is that if you make it that brazen, like Chauvin did, there may be some consequences for you, but I am looking out for you in another way, because I could have given you 40 years and I only gave you 22. That's Chauvin 22. So there are a number of messages there. And that's the way I see it. The point is that that's a sort of a gentle sentence for the type of crime that Chauvin committed.
What the judge seemed to be implying is that people are confusing justice with the trial, and they're not the same thing. People want justice, but what is that? Their version of justice, even the prosecutors said, should be 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
But the judge says, I'm not here to dispense justice. I'm here to try a case. What do you think about that position?
He was there to try a case, that's true. But it's his judgment in terms of what the sentence will be. It's not the prosecutor's right to determine the exact sentence. The judge makes that decision. So he made a decision to do what he did. And that's the way it is. So he's following the law, even though I would have certainly doubled that type of sentence. But he's covered. He covered the law, and he gave the message to the police and other law enforcement people that if they do these things, and it's as clear-cut as it was with Chauvin, there's going to be consequences for you. But in spite of that, I'm giving you a little room in terms of the type of sentence that I have to give you. I I could not give you probation, but I'm going to have to give you something, and that's the way I do it.
Do you see this case as, I mean, with the sentencing, is it over, or is it yet to go another step?
Well, I would suspect that Chauvin is going to be making some legal appeals to do something to lighten the sentence even more. And, you know, I'm not surprised. The police people have a lot of money in their treasury, I guess, and they will support him in that. But I don't think it's just going to end with this.
Do you think any consideration, either by the judge or by the police or by Chauvin himself, do you think any consideration is given to the likelihood that there would be, maybe not today or tomorrow, but soon enough, there would be a reaction and it would not be what they expect the reaction to be?
Yes, that's a possibility. Because I don't think police behavior is going to change. And I would think that the next incident like this is going to have a good impact in terms of getting the people riled up about the abuse of the police system we have here. And so this is going to affect other such cases. And I think that those people in the police area, law enforcement and so forth, better think at least twice or three times if they continue to do what they have been doing, killing thousands and thousands of people unnecessarily in police stops. So it's going to have some effect. I don't know if it's going to cure all the police abuse at all.
Thank you, David, for your call today. 888-874-4888. Henry from Chicago, what are your thoughts on this decision by the judge, the sentencing decision?
Good afternoon, Trace. How you doing?
Fine, thanks, Henry.
All righty. You know, I was looking at well, first of all, we always have to look at these particular situations in regards to a system. Now, personally for me, 22 years wasn't enough because I don't think he was well, technically he, for me personally, he wasn't sentenced correctly. But according to the laws and guidelines of it, I kind of wondered why they gave him the second degree murder charge. And what was so interesting about this was when I was looking it up on Friday. Now, just as a preference, I'm not a lawyer. I don't pretend to practice law. But as I was looking at the Minnesota sentencing guidelines for second and third degree murder charges, I did not see what was considered a mandatory or minimum sentencing guideline. All I saw was for second degree murder, you know, you can't charge him no more than, you know, you can't sentence him no more than 40 years in prison. But I started seeing like mandatory minimum sentences for like, say, first degree murder, which is life in prison in Minnesota courts. But then I saw like mandatory minimum sentences for other crimes, like, you know, theft, well, multiple thefts, and actually drug laws. So I kind of found like this was weird that you don't have a minimum mandatory sentences for second degree murder. So basically, he would have been well within the guidelines of sentencing him for, you know, for 1 year in prison. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, if that was the case, but I did not see one. So I thought that was interesting the way he was charged, because there was no mandatory minimum sentencing. Now, obviously, they had to give him some time to kind of, you know, I would say, make an example of what they would call progress. And obviously, progress, you know, for some people, does not mean much, especially to me, when you're talking about, you know, just focusing on this one guy, Derek Chauvin, and what other policemen, and I think Ed, you know, stated clearly about, while this trial was going on, there was another police shooting not too far from the actual murder of George Floyd at the same time. So the system will always protect itself, and it will not make the person who enforces the system too much of an example. You know, you'll get a slap on the wrist just to show people that, you know, we're doing something about it. But at the same time, they're focusing and they're making us focus on individuals as the culprits and not the system itself, because obviously the system itself allowed, you know, or gave Derek Chauvin the mentality of doing this because he figured that, you know, he'd get off easy. But what they didn't account for was, you know, the uprising that happened. And obviously they had to give him something to, I guess, appease the sensibilities of the people, which to me, I think they should still, you know, uprise again because of the sentencing. But obviously the system is working the way it's supposed to be.
Henry, are you there?
I am still here. I'm hearing some kind of strange noise.
Yes. What you're hearing is usually when anything, I've said it so many times, anything that makes noise, the first place they start is right under my window. So that noise that you're hearing is that they're pruning the hedges.
Okay.
And they must have had a little meeting. They said, is this going to make a lot of noise? Yes. Then let's go to Utrecia's window and start there. that's what's going on.
Okay.
I'm so used to it now. But you make a really good point, especially in regard to the applicability of the charge and the time that the charge carries if the full charge were reinforced. But of course, we see that Chauvin got some special dispensation here. He got quite a bit of consideration, even though he's not happy that he got only to serve 2/3 of his sentence in prison. I mean, he does not regard this as a gift at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. And what's interesting, like I said, the sentencing guidelines was, you know, it just shocked me that there was no mandatory minimum sentencing for second and third degree murder. And I, at that point, I kind of felt like this was the charge of second degree murder was purposely done to make people think that they're doing something about it, but at the same time, they're boxing him into a situation where, like you said, he can get some kind of leniency for being a police officer, for supposedly, you know, doing his rightful duty, or being a person who, you know, his life was being threatened by this, you know, big giant black man who was on drugs and whatever narrative they want to, you know, spew out against the George Floyd. But at the same time, they'll let you know that, well, we're following the mandates, we're following the laws according to what the Minnesota statute says. But at the same time, we're not realizing that these laws were not made for us. And like I said, the system is working exactly how it's supposed to work.
Well, that was a very intriguing piece of information that you shared with us today about no minimum sentencing that you found out. I hope you misread it. I hope it was.
Yeah, I hope so too.
I hope you misread it. But thank you so much. Thank you, Henry, for your call today. We'll take this break and come back to your calls at 888-874-4888. And that's going to be right after this. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. We're discussing today a subject that we did not get a chance to discuss because of the timing. The decision with regard to Derek Chauvin, the killer of George Floyd, the timing of the decision was after the program had ended, and so we did not have a chance to discuss it live, but we certainly are not going to ignore it. So we're picking up from where we should have been since Friday and trying to catch up on what people see as the issues in this case, their reactions to the sentencing decision, and generally, what does this say about not just this case, but about the system of policing in general and the system of jurisprudence? The judge made the decision, as he is within his right to do. He had sentenced Chauvin to 22 and a half years, but said of those 22 and a half years, he's not really going to have to serve all 22 and a half years in prison, but he should be eligible for serving at least the last seven years in a supervised program. The prosecutors had sought a 30-year sentence for Chauvin. That did not happen. But it was the decision by the judge, Judge Cahill, to come up with this particular decision. And we're talking about what the fallout is likely to be, and in some cases already is. 888-874-4888 is the number to call, and we'll continue with this discussion. You know, it's very, very important when we have cases like this to take a note of major, major points in a case at which we see specific actions being taken and those actions being caused by perhaps demonstrations, perhaps advocates, people talking about the case in a particular way, lawyers, experts. But in this particular case, this judge said he is a judge because he's qualified. And as a judge, he can make certain decisions. He doesn't need any help. He doesn't need any criticism. He is able to make these decisions as he has for all the years he's been on the bench. He's again known as a fair-minded judge. He's had a history of being known as a fair-minded judge so that the public should not be unduly troubled. The public should understand that he, as a judge, it was his judgment. And he's entitled as a judge to make that judgment. What should happen in this case? He was clear, though, and this is a very interesting delineation. He is not there to deliver justice. He was clear about that. He's there to supervise this case and the trial, and with the application of the law. He's not there as an advocate. He's not there to make decisions around what we popularly call justice. Justice meaning Derek Chauvin killed George Floyd. Derek Chauvin should pay. He says that's the wrong formula. That's not the formula he employed. He came up with a whole different formula and a whole different approach, which he says is perfectly within the law itself. As a judge, he is able to make these decisions independently and to exercise individual judgment. 888-874-4888. Veronica from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good day. How art thou?
No, I'm okay. How art thou?
Oh, I am well. I am well. I think I have a little dementia, or I'm either going crazy because I don't understand how a judge, well, I should say alternatics, that would be the real judge, how he could have stated that this person could only serve, Chauvin could only serve 7 years. Now, I'm thinking
no,
of
no,
people
No, 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 he didn't
that,
say that. He didn't say that. He said that Chauvin could serve two-thirds of the sentence in prison. And then by that time, if it is determined that he qualifies for consideration to enter another program, he is then eligible. He has to apply to the court for that. He's eligible to serve out the remaining 7 years of his sentence in this program.
Okay. I'm thinking of human beings that are given life sentences for what he did. There are people who have, let's take, the Black Panther Party, BLA, Black Liberation Army, that have been in prison for over 40 to 50 years that are still languishing. There are people that marched that are still languishing, and they did not do the crime that he did. Some people are languishing that have not killed anyone. Wrongly incarcerated. Yet, it seems the system, as Kwame Ture said, capitalism, it works to keep people, the rich. They do not serve, the law does not apply to the rich. They can buy their way out. In Chauvin's case, the tax dollars of the people of that city paid for 13 lawyers. They spent over $1 million for this. It is insane. This is why I believe in defunding the police. The monies need to go to the people, the community-controlled schools throughout America, and we should not have the laws as it is now. It is not serving the people, the working class people. It is not serving them at all. The rich are getting richer, and they're more corrupt than ever. The majority.
But aren't you putting two things that are not necessarily related together for the sake of making your argument?
Well, I am. I am putting two different things together. The entire system is flawed. We can't rebuild it. We can't keep going, doing the same things and expecting different results. There is no reason that one person from the Black Panther Party should be in prison. There's no reason that these people should be in prison, and they have the audacity to suggest that this man is not going to do 22 years. It does not make sense. They have one law for certain people, and they have another law for other people. That is clear and blatant. You know, and the police unions and so forth, they are the parole boards, and these are the chauvins that have probably leaned on this judge, because this does not make sense to me. I can't even formulate it in my head that this is acceptable. And they need to go march at the judge's house, because something is wrong. Something is wrong.
But did the judge break the law?
No, the laws were designed that when the people know their rights and they follow them and they obey them and they do what they say you should do, they just change the rules. Because I would not be having this conversation if Chauvin was an African man, if Chauvin was a Asian man, if Chauvin was a man Afro anywhere on this planet. I'm sorry that this could even, I'm in shock. No, I'm not in shock, because this is the system. This is the corrupt system of which I have always stood up against, and I will continue until the last breath in my life. This must stop.
So what, and therefore, what would have been the appropriate sentence in your view?
You know, I'm going to speak in contradictions again. If there is any equal equity and justice, he would be getting a life sentence. That's one. That wasn't even on the table. And just the fact that it was set up that way, that is a problem. The next thing, incarceration has not helped. The system was set up. This is a convict lease law for anyone that is not European. This is January 6th all over again. That's all I can say. This is the system that they are upholding.
If this were a fair trial, if the sentencing also was fair, what would have been Chauvin's fate?
Oh, his fate. You know, they didn't even, okay. I have issues even with the fact that they did not investigate every person that he arrested. They did not investigate the people that sent him out every time he committed a crime against a human being that was outside of the law. He was allowed to build up to this, to have 21 cases, I know your show said 17, that were, you know, but he has over 21 cases against him. He could not have been on the force to commit the 22nd, where he murdered George Floyd. And that's what's on the books, you know. And with that, he would have gotten a sentence for life. He would have gotten a life sentence. He would have gotten at least 20 years. And his depraved inhumanity. And also, they would have, there is a, you know, what was the reason for him deciding to end this person's life? That would have gotten him more than 20 years. if this was a justified service to the people.
Okay, I have to ask you this question at this juncture. Whose fault is it that these things did not occur? These things did not come through in the trial.
Oh, that would be his, that would be his defense. Oh, excuse me. The people that were representing George Floyd, they did not represent him. Well, they did not. They did not. Because, as I said, if they had represented him well, all those things would have been brought out. They would. They,
but not
they,
necessarily.
He would not
you
have
see,
been on
the,
trial.
Here's the thing. You can, in a trial, especially a trial
yes.
like this, you
yes.
can't bring in things that are considered, because this itself has to be a reason for hearings and whatnot. You can't bring in what the court would consider to be irrelevant or extraneous material into a
mm-hmm.
case that is clearly defined. Did Chauvin kill George Floyd? And how and why? That's pretty much it. That's what the focus was,
right.
was of the trial.
Mm-hmm.
But
yes.
what you're suggesting is that Chauvin...
Character witnesses.
Mm-hmm. How are you going to have a character witness?
Oh, no,
in a
for George
trial?
Floyd. The people that observed what happened that day, you know, they brought some of them to trial. Some were not brought to trial. And they all could have given their testimony. Also, the testimonies of people, because he was known in that area, they would have been able to provide his character. Because this was not his first grow around.
Mm-hmm.
He had 21 other cases. Would that have not been fair to George Floyd to bring all of those issues to the judge?
Well, all of these issues are generally, this is generally speaking, these issues are generally ironed out before the trial begins. These motions are usually filed and filed before the court as to what it is they intend to do. But apparently the prosecutors didn't see a need for that. Or it was determined to be so extraneous to the strict fact of the transaction between George Floyd and Derek Chauvin. And that transaction resulting in the brutal death and murder of George Floyd. That's all they wanted to concentrate on. I think we should have a program talking about the legal tactics that were employed and were not employed and the impact of
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
Is what we're
exactly.
talking about today. Thank you so
exactly.
much, Veronica. I appreciate your passion about this case, and I thank you for sharing it with us, because I know it took a bit of energy from you to do that today. So I thank you for sacrificing.
I thank you. I thank
today.
You also. Yes, free the Panthers. Thank
right.
you so much.
Thank you. Thank,
freedom
thank you
now.
So much.
I love you.
Well, that, thank you so much. That brings us to the end of our program today. We have a lot to talk about with this case. It's not finished. We're just talking about the sentencing and, you know, interesting reactions that we're having to it. But we have to get into the details here of how this case was conducted. We have to talk about the role of the prosecution. Were they prepared for this case? The role of the judge, the role of the law. The so-called law. The judge said plainly, I am not here to deliver justice. I'm here to try a case. And I have rules I have to follow. And I followed them. And again, he is known as a fair judge. So you see all these anomalies occurring, and we'll get to them because it's important to understand all the nuances here, but how they combined to deliver a predictable result. Thanks so much for listening. Coming up next, let me get my notes here. You know, you get old, you have to write things down. You really do. You have to write things down. Coming up next, what in the cell is going on with April Renee? Stay tuned, keep it right here, and we'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.